Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to my show. You know, my show is where we're going to talk about concerns or thoughts or issues, and we always want to talk about what is facing us in the day life. And we want to offer tips and solutions that you may not even have considered. So many people are having so many life challenges these days, and they are going around and saying, this person told me this, or the doctor told me that, and maybe this is what I need to be doing. And sometimes people aren't really listening to what you're saying, or maybe what you're saying is not necessarily what you might need. So on this show, we like to talk about varied topics, and then we go all around the circle. What is something simple to be done? What is a little bit harder to be done? What you might not have even have looked at? So just different ideas. Today, my show, you know, it's still hot here in the South. And heat index yesterday was 93. You know, I would just really wish the summer would go away for a little while down here. But you know, it's October, and I can always remember taking my kids to school in the dark and the cold. You know, that mid-October thing, just before it's time to turn the clocks back? It's getting harder and harder to wake up, so are your kids struggling to wake up? You know, I know it's hard to even get them out to school. I had 4 kids within 10 years, and it was super difficult. One would want to go to school, one didn't, one was hot, one was cold, one didn't want to go to school for various reasons. So do they really fight you to go to school? And do you really know the insight into why they might not want to go? Would it be their grades? Are they going up or are they down? Are they struggling? This is October. We're getting towards the middle of the year. Things are getting harder. Those easy reviews from last year are over. Are they getting bullied in school? Do they feel out of place? Do they feel like they just don't measure up to all the other kids? So today, my guest will be Tanya Mitchell from Learning RX, and we'll be speaking to her in a moment. And she will give us some insight into possibly helping your child develop their brain skills and develop their brain cells to be able to start retaining some information or try grasping some information. If they're just feeling out of the loop, you may be able to start bringing them back into the loop, and we'll be talking about that in a minute. I'm also beginning to share products that I've really, you know, wanted to talk about improving quality of my life. You know, each month we're briefly going to talk about them and share my experience. Today, interesting, I'm talking about memory, what we can remember about names and places and what we had for lunch yesterday. It all seems to be jumbled together. There's just so much information in your head. It just keeps going and going. And you think forward so you can have everything ready for your kids or ready for your family, or what do I need to do before I get to work? And things filter through so fast anymore, it's hard to even retain things. You know, I was really starting to have a problem after several stressful events that I had in my life in the past 5 years. I was forgetting things that would be normal, like my kids would say, I have something going on at school tomorrow, and I would say, okay, got it. Next day, totally forgot it. So I really needed to start to focus on that. And I found a company called Quincy Bioscience, and their product is called Prevagen Professional. And each day I take one capsule of their 40 milligram. They do have a 10. You're welcome to ask them about it. And I only take one capsule a day, and it really is starting to help. I have a lot less of why didn't you remember, or whatever, oh, you forgot again from the family. You know, it has a unique ingredient to help improve short-term memory and word recall. Prevagen Professional, you know, it doesn't interact with any other supplements or medications. And I really found that was very important because a lot of times we say, I'm taking everything already. It's got to be in there. Well, this unique ingredient is not in there. This is totally something very different. It is not in regular supplements, and it's not in other regular herbal products or homeopathy. And it has no common allergen, which I found was extremely important because I am a person who is allergic to soy and also to seafood and shellfish, which I found were a lot of byproducts in a lot of supplements. So I am very, very strict about having those items around me because I would have a severe allergic reaction. And research has shown it can reduce brain cell loss up to 50%. You know, I think that's a great margin, 50% for brain cell loss. Every single day you feel like, I didn't remember this yesterday, and the next day it's like, well, I didn't remember the day at all. So you really want to try to keep what you have in your memory and your recall. I would encourage you to give them a call and ask them about Prevagen Professional and see if it can help you. Their number is 888-895-6463. You know, they've got tons of clinical studies, a lot of reports on how it works. All you need to do is just ask them for help. You dial the number 888-895-6463 and tell them you'd like more information on Prevagen Professional and that you heard it here on the radio. And they'll give you some information. They'll direct you to somebody that will say, okay, tell me your story. What is it? What do you need? Where are you at in your life? You know, it works for me, and I just wanted to share this with you. I thought it would be something you would be maybe interested in working with. Today, my guest is Tanya Mitchell. She is the co-author of a book called Unlock the Einstein Inside. Sounds really, really interesting. I've read the book. It is absolutely fabulous. She is also has several companies. They are called Learning RX. And Learning RX is a franchise licensed program which helps develop cognition. And we'll define that word, so don't just go crazy yet. It's going to help tell us about the brain. She will tell us how it works, what maybe we could be missing or your children could be struggling with that standard teachers might not even know. And it significantly helps ADHD. It can also help with children on the autism spectrum, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's. So I'd like to welcome Tanya Mitchell to the show. Hello, Tanya.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Can you tell us a little bit more about your company, about Learning RX and about the book?
Yes. Well, it's a family-owned company, and my dad, Dr. Ken Gibson, is the founder. Years ago, when he was growing up, he struggled with reading, and he was very strong in other skills, and I think it led him on a lifelong journey to figure out how he could make the biggest improvements in learning for people. And that's what it's led to. So we currently have 87 centers in the U.S., and we're in 21 countries with our programs.
You know, it really sounded interesting when I was reading the book, Unlock the Einstein Inside, and that book is available on their website. It is a free download of the book if you are interested at unlocktheeinsteininside.com. When I was reading the book, it was saying a lot of things about cognition. Right there, first words, first page. Can you give us a little more information about what that word means?
Sure. And cognition, you know, there's different parts to it. There could be behavior and, you know, just awareness. When we talk about cognitive skills, we might also say terms like processing skills, learning skills, or your IQ. And there's some skills that people are fairly familiar with, for instance, attention or how well you focus or how long you can focus. There's skills like memory. So when we're sitting down and working with our kids, as parents, you might say, wow, they have a hard time remembering these different things.
Right.
But there's other skills that are really important. Logic, so everyone sort of thinks about logic and reasoning and just how well you can figure things out. There's a skill called visual processing, which is someone's ability to visualize images or remember images. And there's another skill called auditory processing, which for our society is extremely important. And that's someone's ability to analyze sounds in a syllable, at least a portion of it, which is the number one skill needed for reading and spelling. And so all put together, all those skills put together would make up someone's IQ. You would test out each skill and then average it together. So in essence, we're working on skills that make up someone's IQ.
So I can remember one of my children, extremely intelligent, would sit there in second grade and be reading Stephen Hawking's book inside of his other book, and he would be causing all kinds of trouble in the classroom because he just could read rapidly, and that was the end of the story. And then he would skipped a grade, and then the next classroom he was in, he was just starting all kinds of trouble because in the first month, you know, when they send all the kids with their books home, he would read all the books within that month, and he'd say, okay, I already know the class, so what am I going to do for the rest of the year? You know, that's one extreme for a child. And then my other child, which was totally the other extreme, where there was no way, no how he would sit there and read even one page because I would do their homework with them every single night, every single child, and he just wasn't interested. He would be fidgety. It would be this, that, or the other, and we had a real struggle with him. And it, you know, if you look back, this was in the early 90s, late 80s, and it really, there was not information then about what you do with these children other than get them to sit in the chair and make them sit there till they're done with it, you know? And I think we've really come a really long, far way, don't you think?
Yes, and what I would say is that just as an individual, we all come to the table with different tools and different skills, and it would be rare to find someone that has strengths in all areas. Even if they have strengths, normally they'll also have lower skills. But it's usually processing skills or these cognitive skills that make things easier or difficult for kids. I always say, you know, if I were to give, and I have four kids myself, ages 11, 9, 7, and 2. And if I sat my 11, 9, and 7-year-old down and each gave them a task, they're probably going to approach that task differently. They're going to finish it at different times. They're going to have, you know, different answers or correct answers versus incorrect answers. And that's because they're using it and processing it differently. One of the main things that I try to get parents to do is go get their child tested. If they're struggling with schoolwork, Or even if you have an extreme case where you have a child who might do really well in some areas, but, you know, struggle in others, if you go get them tested, then you can begin to have some answers and insight into how to help them the best.
You know, I think it takes a while for some parents to even realize that there is an issue, because parents now don't have time to do kids' homework. They don't have time to sit down and talk to them every day. It's kind of get up, get in the car, you're going to daycare, you're going to school, and I'm going to work, and repeat that same process when you come home. I think sometimes when you have one or maybe just two children, you don't notice as much. I guess maybe I with four is like every single child was so different, and you realize how everyone has done things differently.
Yes. And I'd also say that, I just got my two of my kids tested last week. So just as a parent, I'm going through some of the same issues other parents would go through. By having them tested, I'm able to look at their skills. And the truth is that if we offer them a lot of compensation now or a lot of help now, they're not going to get that later. So in some ways, it's good for them to struggle and have to go through things, because I think it will help build some stronger skills for later. But it can be frustrating, especially, you know, if I have four kids, trying to manage them all, do all their homework. It's a lot for any parent.
And I think that's where a lot of kids tend to get set to the side, when a lot of people, and you know what, a lot of times the parents have those issues also themselves, and when they see the child struggle, it's like, oh, well, I struggled through, so what, don't worry about it, you'll get through. You know, and school is a lot harder now, you know, and everything is different. And I think when kids come home with homework, it's like, well, how am I going to help this kid with this homework when I don't even know what it says or I don't even know what is going on about it? So do you think maybe it's harder for some parents also to realize that their child has an issue?
Yes, although I would say that if parents have the same issues, which can happen a lot, so if you take if you take someone, you know, a parent that struggled to read and now they see their child is struggling to read, I think they're wanting to help that child is they're much more aggressive in trying to help that child than maybe someone that didn't have reading difficulties because they understand the effects of that learning problem and they know how it affected them in school. And so the likelihood of them getting help to me is a lot higher. Even if they have lower income because of it, they'll go out of their way to help their kid.
Well, you talked about testing a lot. What does testing mean? Is this something you get in the school? Is it something you go to a psychiatrist for? Or is it something that they just do online? What does testing mean? And as a parent, you think about, what is this going to mean for me? What do I have to do?
Well, I think a lot of parents know that there is a problem. So, and whether it's just one of their children take up a lot of family time or, you know, doing math is very frustrating or they just see the difference in their kids. They see that there's differences. And then for years, I'm part of LinkedIn, you know, and I see all these parents post questions. My child can do this, but they can't do this. What's wrong? And so there's a lot of questions. And I think cognitive testing and testing the skills that I'm talking about, memory, logic and reasoning, attention, processing speed, auditory and visual processing. By testing those skills, number one, parents can get answers as to why their child is struggling. Is it just a behavior issue? Is it just a motivation issue? Is it a content issue? Is the parent, is the, you know, the teacher not teaching them correctly, which I don't think, I think that's rarely the problem. But 88% of the time, it's due to poor cognitive skills. And if you have that understanding, then hopefully with all the research on brain plasticity, you can start to seek a solution for the problem.
So do they, how do they find out about getting this testing? And can you give us an example of one type of testing and follow that through and tell us about it? What my child would experience.
I'm talking about IQ testing. Learning RX centers all offer the Woodcock-Johnson Cognitive Abilities Testing, which is probably a premier test, IQ test. You can also go to a psychologist and get that same type of testing. But if you're not looking for a diagnosis, if you're just looking for, you know, deficiencies or if your child has strengths, Learning RX centers will offer that testing for $200 to $300, where a psychologist might cost $15,000 to $3,000. Other tests, schools will do tests like the Wechsler or the WISC, but you really want subscores. So I don't, you know, if someone tells me that my child's IQ is 120, that means nothing because what it means is they have some high skills, but it's not telling me anything of value that's going to get them help. So I want to be able to see subscores of the test. And there's we have a test online called the Gibson test that people can do online. But the best thing would be to go get some one-on-one testing, you know, for $200 to have answers. So, I mean, you think about the thousands and thousands of dollars parents spend to find a diagnosis. This will give them more answers than even a diagnosis. So I would start there. I just had my two kids tested. I've had them tested before, but I would like, I think one child has focus issues, but I also want to see if there's some other deficiencies that are leading to his attention problems. And then I have a seven-year-old who I haven't tested yet just because he's young, and I wanted to give him some time. And he's real strong with math. But he's weaker. What he doesn't like to read. He can read, but he doesn't like to. And I want to see what underlying reasons are causing that.
So there are examples of what your process is on the learningrx.com website? So if parents are interested, they can go there to see what we are talking about and what type of testing, and it would define what that testing means on the website?
Yes. So the all our centers use the Woodcock, and so it would talk about you get a full report, and it talks about the results.
So if I'm a parent and I have limited funding, is any of this covered by insurance?
I would go into it thinking it is not. You know, you have to.
Okay.
I think most parents want their child to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many times I've heard a parent say, if my child could get into Harvard, I'll pay for it, you know,
right.
even if they don't have funds. And for lots of students that we have going through our programs, help develop skills so that they can actually get into college. So you have to sort of think of it as a college prep, even though it's cognitive training.
So in this training that we are describing in the book, Unlock the Einstein Inside.com is the book. And there's also available a free download of the book on the website. So if my child is 4 or 5, I understand you can start working then, and the optimal age is probably 7 to 10. Can my child, let's say they are getting ready to go to college, and it's like they are saying, oh, you know, 1 week into college, and it's like, I want to come home. And you wonder why they want to come home. Is that something or another time that you might also be able to help that child, or is there that window already closed?
No, it's not closed. And we work with people from 4 to 94. Not a whole lot of 94-year-olds, but we could. And I think the best way to think of it is almost like physical fitness. So if I hired a personal trainer to work with one of my kids, I could tell the personal trainer, you know, my child wants to play baseball or my child wants to dance better. And then that personal trainer could take them through exercises and strengthen muscles that would then make them do better in whatever they wanted them to do. And so for us, someone can come in and we can find out where they're weak and listen to chief concerns, and then they go through special training that develops those skills. And it can happen at any age. So, you know, one difference between high school and college and even working is that you have more time. So what happens is if someone has to work really, really hard to get the same result as someone else, you know, maybe twice or three times as hard, performance drops when they have more work that they have to do. So I think it's a great time. If you have someone that has to work really, really hard to get the result, it's actually my favorite student, because when you can free up their time or when they can process things faster, then they normally don't stop working or take more leisure time. They just get a lot more done. To help them, I had one student who was going to be kicked out of the IB program at high school. And I put him through the program, and he started 2 nonprofits when he was done, because now he had time to do other things.
So the process we are talking about today is Learning RX, where it is developing your brain plasticity by cognitive training. And can you tell us, so is this something that they come to you at the center every day, every week, for years, or do they come every other few years, or do they come and they just sit there and they work 7 days a week, 7 nights a week? What would an example of a plan be for a young child, you know, a middle school child and maybe an adult?
Well, I think it has to do with what their expectations are and where they want to go. One thing that's very unique about our program is that we measure results. So we pre-test and then we post-test at different increments. We know what type of results we can get in 60 hours, 120 hours, 144 hours. 120 hours would be sort of the average program. And we know that we can get a 20 to 30 percentile gain in that amount of time, depending upon the skill. So if someone comes to us and they're at the 50th percentile, 120 hours might get them up to the 80th percentile, which is where you need to be for most college entrance exams. so maybe 120 hours works. But if someone comes in and tests at the fourth percentile, goes through 120 hours, we might make, you know, a 500% improvement, get them to the 24th percentile, but that doesn't mean they're out of the woods, you know, as far as learning problems.
Right.
They may need to come back to us two or three times to get their skills up to where the parent or the child wants to be.
You know, that's interesting you say that. Everybody wants to be able to be smarter, and they want to be more brilliant, and they want to be quicker, and they want to be more alert and retain everything. But really, what you're also saying is that LearningRx is not just for those people. It can be for everyone, because obviously a person with pre-Alzheimer's or Parkinson's may be having a totally different goal, but then also the children who are on the autism spectrum have totally a different goal. But you can work with all these people in these different goals, right?
Yes, and we have a couple cases. Alzheimer's is very new, and I don't want to make too many claims about it. But we did have one, we have a franchisee who just came to our convention, and his dad had been had just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and he went through the training and had a 20 to 40 percentile gain across the board in his deficient skills. So now it's a point, so he regained some lost skills, and now it's a point of maintenance for him. So I told the franchisee he should put his dad through an hour to 2 hours of training a week until, you know, for him,
right.
If he can maintain those skills, that's a better quality of life. So I would just keep doing it. My dad actually had a brain injury last year through an E. coli infection. And he had short-term memory of less than 5 seconds. So I could ask him a question, and then 5 seconds later I could ask him the question again, and he wouldn't remember it. And he improved somewhat from that. So I would say within a couple months he was back maybe 60%. But that's, you know, it's his program. So he went through his training and probably got back to about 90%. Which was good for what happened. And he's on a maintenance program, too. So for older people that want to retain skills, again, if you think about physical fitness, if I put someone through training and get them in a pristine condition, sort of the ultimate brain condition you could be in a six-month period, for older people to retain that, just like physical fitness, you still would need to be physically, you know, active to maintain it. The same is true for the brain. For little kids, once they go through training, because they're in school every day, our retention is over 99%.
Because when they're in school, they also are using that, and so they're practicing a little bit more, right?
Yes, and they're pushed to do things they don't necessarily want to do.
Right.
And I think that's really important to maintain brain health. So it may not sound exciting, but it's good. If you understand the brain is plastic and can continually improve or decrease skill depending upon how you use it, then you have to attack weaknesses, and you have to be willing to try to develop weaknesses. Forever and not be compensatory and not, you know, not work around or accommodate poor skills, but attack them.
You know, we always think that the brain is just something that is there and it's on the top of your head and it works and you don't really need to figure it out. You just need to go with it. And I think that's really important to understand that you do have some form of participation needed to be able to train that brain. Because if you look at little babies and you're sitting there reading a book to them all the time, they will turn around and read the words that you read to them. Let's say if you're sitting there, the other day I was babysitting a two-year-old and her attention span was very short. So I was reading the book through in the first hour and I did not read all the words that were on the page. And I know which ones I skipped and which ones I used to substitute. And then we went back and next hour we read it again. And then the next hour we read it again. And then the third or fourth hour, she started repeating what I was saying. And I could tell that it was just repeating what you're saying So she was getting the exercise. All she was doing was listening to me and repeating, listen and repeating. But then I asked her to pick out things on the page for me, and it was impossible. Like, if I said the rabbit was jumping, and I said, where is the rabbit? They look at you like, I don't know what you're talking about. You just told me the rabbit was jumping. That's all I know. You know, so what you're saying is about exercising that brain, about, you know, looking at something relationship to that and start getting those connections better. You know, it sounds so crazy to say your brain needs to exercise, you know. Everybody thinks of jumping up and down and doing jumping jacks, and nobody does those anymore either, you know. But it's, they just let the brain just, well, you know, I see it, I know it, I go to school and I leave, you know. And schools become such a social place anymore. Most of the time, it's not even learning half the time.
Yes, there's some interesting studies. There's a study that Harvard did that showed that 90% of adults stop learning. So no wonder why our skills decline.
Right.
And then if you look at, you know, I have a two-year-old who I'd love 2 to 4-year-olds. I love their learning process. There's a study that looks at how many words people say to their kids based on the parents' education.
Yes.
And I think it's a very interesting study. And what it shows is, of course, the more education you have, the more words you speak to your child. And it's within the thousands. So where someone that maybe didn't finish high school or just had a high school degree or graduated from high school might speak hundreds of words, someone that has a master's might speak thousands of words to their child each day. And I always try to stay cognizant of that so that when I'm with my little two-year-old, I'm constantly talking to her and sharing with her and describing things, because it has a lot to do with learning. And at her age, one of the main skills I want to develop is her ability to analyze sounds, because I know the more she hears and the more she communicates, the likelihood is that she'll do better in reading. There's also a study that looked at how much a child heard as far as foreign languages.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were, if the child were, you know, had different languages in their life, so Spanish or German or Chinese, and then they didn't hear it anymore, but tried to learn it later in life, that they would learn that language 7 times faster.
Wow.
And that's because you're keeping some of those connections to analyze sounds. So you know, as a parent, realize how important that little age, you know, the little kid is in that age. And I don't think you have to force a lot of learning with them. You can learn with them. You know, you can learn while they're playing, and just talking to them and having conversations is really important.
I think the conversations that parents have with their children is very important, because I have seen examples of parents nowadays with little kids who are saying, oh, okay, she wants cake. And then she'll look at the child and she'll say, do you want cake? And the child say yes or no. And that's very limited, whereas I, with my kids, I would say, what is it that you want? And they had to come up with an answer. It wasn't just yes or no, or sit down and have a temper tantrum. They really needed to express what they needed. And they would ask me something. They'd say maybe one word, and I'd say, I don't know what that means. And then they turned around, I want cake that's on the table, you know, and versus instead of just using one word. And I think parents have to take that responsibility in doing that. And there's a lot of parents who don't understand that that's so important these days.
Yes, I think sometimes we think the easier we can make a child's life, the better. And I don't think that's true. So,
right.
As a parent, I want my child, number one, I want my child to have the skills necessary so that when they tell me, Mom, I want to, I have one, you know, we live in Colorado Springs, and one of my sons says he wants to go to the Air Force Academy. He wants to be a pilot. Well, I know that those people need extremely high skills. My husband's actually military. And then my other son wants to be a football player, which I think is probably normal for an 11-year-old. And my daughter wants to be, goes between a veterinarian and an actress, which I think is pretty normal too.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't want to do is at some point have them realize they don't have those skills.
Right.
So number one job, I want to make sure that I can develop those skills so that they can choose what they want to do in their life. And then number two, I want to make them well-rounded so that they don't need to seek help from people. They can do things themselves, but they can also relate in a social setting. You know, as a salesperson, in a lot of the different things I do, just having personnel, you know, social skills and being able to have conversations with people and be empathetic, extremely important skill to have in almost any aspect of life. And so the more they learn to do by themselves and the better they relate to people, I know that they're going to do better when they get older and they're going to have more choices. So if I make things too easy, I'm going to ruin it for them.
You know, I think I noticed when I was growing up, a lot of times I would ask my mother something and she would always say to me, "I don't know, go look it up. And when you find the answer, bring it back." And to this day, I realized that she did not really know the answer, but she learned by me going looking it up in the encyclopedia or at the library and brought it back to her. So in a way, it was both teaching each other. So if the parent may not know, I think a lot of shame goes with parents that don't know or don't understand, and they don't step it up for their children. So that's a perfect
yes.
example of being able to get support. You know, don't let your inhibitions or your issues stop your children because they aren't you. They're different than you. And they can learn.
Yes, and I think actually you brought up autistic students. And
mm-hmm.
I think sometimes when we find that our child is different than other kids,
mm-hmm.
we sort of hold on to them tighter.
Right.
And I think in a lot of ways you're not helping that child. By coddling the child, you know, and trying to protect them, you're actually making their weaknesses weaker. And so when we work with autistic children, a lot of those kids have, you know, obviously have difficulty communicating or being in a setting where there's a lot of people because they have a hard time filtering out white noise or they have auditory processing issues. And in our training, one of the things we do is we'll start in sort of a room. You know, and if they're really bad, we might close the door if they can't focus at all. And then as soon as they start developing skills, we open the door so that they have to deal with outside noise. We'll add distractions into the training so they have to stay focused. And then we might bring them out into the middle and have them train there in a very noisy setting. So, you know, through different degrees of training, we put them in a situation that they probably have to deal with all the time. So that they can communicate, you know, at small parties, or they will go to the movies. We had a student who would never go to the movies because it hurt her ears too much. She was too sensitive. But she was able to do that. So I think parents need to understand that, you know, in normal life it's nice to protect your children, but don't protect them to the point that that you're not helping them.
You know, it's interesting. I saw on the news the other day, and they were talking about something new for the children. And I don't really recall what it was, but at the same time, they were talking about kids sitting in the back seat of the car. And they said, well, yeah, you really need to have, you know, movies in the car and food in the car and earphones in the car so each child can listen to their own programs and they would be happy and their own little disc player. Oh, that's what it was, a disc player. You know, disc player, and they could have everything of their own and all. And they said, man, you know, we really need to have everything because otherwise the kids just sit there and look at the back of the front seat. And I think back to my own childhood and we were forced, look out that window. Tell me what you see out that window. You know, and I think becoming electronic children and dependent upon the parent to provide everything for them is maybe not the best way the generation is going now, because if you ask the children right now, could you tell me how to get home if we're driving in the car, they wouldn't even know what you're talking about, such as turn left at the stop sign or turn right and take this exit or whatever. No one would ever pay attention to that, you know, and when they get to be older, oh, well, I have a GPS. So is that really training, or is that even learning something outside of yourself or outside of electronics? You know, spatial learning, you know, how far away is that stop sign that I need to start slowing down so I can turn right to get on my street, you know? That's something that seems so common to so many people, but yet to these children that have grown up with electronics or parents that have done everything for them, it is extremely difficult.
Right, and I could give you actually research to defend either side. I went to a brain conference where one of the articles they had was on like Call of Duty, sort of the violent video games, and how those video games seem to improve attention. where if you take like a baby Einstein video, if you've seen research on that, it would say that it actually hurts the child. Probably because it doesn't have as much interaction. Or then there's sort of that middle electronic, like Dora the Explorer, where they'll try to communicate with the viewer, and that seemed to have some good effects. So there's research that would back up different things, and we're not electronic, and I know parents that won't let their child watch any TV until they're three. So I think there's all spectrums. What I would say is, if a parent thinks of every situation as a learning opportunity for their child, you know, we have kids to spend time with then, hopefully. I mean, I want to enjoy them, especially their ages, you know. I mean, they're never going to be seven again. And so conversations with children in the car, we've done spelling bees, sound bees. We'll make a movie in our head. We'll play, you know, the ABC game, or let's find animals. I think because I do commute twice a week, which isn't too bad. But when I'm in the car with them, it's a learning time. It's you know, my little 2-year-old. Even on the way to work today, she came with to work with me today. We'll talk about, you know, when, because she knows when there's going to be cows. I'm in Colorado.
Right.
She knows when there's going to be deer. She knows
right.
When there's going to be horses. And so I'll say things like, Chloe, what's coming next? You know?
Right.
And she knows. And so we have conversations every single day. And that's a precious time I have with her. So maybe long trips. I've done video games on, you know, like 13-hour trips. But I would hate for parents to think that they're having a positive influence on their kids by putting them, you know, in a headphone situation. Think of that as time off for the parent.
Right.
But I wouldn't have that as a positive.
You know,
unless the parent needs a pause.
I can always think back to there was this friend of mine. He's a dentist, and he works pretty hard every day, 5 days a week, and his wife also works intermittently. But he would always say, we're getting ready to go to the shore. You know, they lived in the Northeast, so going to Jersey Shore. And when he gets in Jersey Shore, right before he gets on the turnpike in Pennsylvania, he gives all the kids Benadryl. And I'm like, why are you doing that? He says, I need them to sleep. I'm not listening to them going down. And it was such a shock to my system that it really woke me up that I really did not believe that there were other parents out there that did things differently than I did, you know, and I was confused by that because my kids knew a little bit of every single thing. They would see people doing simple things like changing a tire. So my kids would sit down and watch them do it, and how did you do that, and which way did you turn that? They were so inquisitive, and they really were loving the information about a bazillion different things. And here, these other people who were actually educated were saying, I don't want to listen to them, just shut them up, I got to go. And it was such a huge, it was like the other side of the world to me. So when we say about kids always having information or learning things, you know, there is a great difference on how children are learning these days and what we're actually teaching them.
Yeah. And I would, even if we, you know, get back to sort of attention skills,
right.
One, attention, those are skills that can be strengthened and improved.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had kids that went from like a 12-second attention span to 20 minutes where they could stay focused and not ask other questions.
Right.
You know, so I think some attention issues can be led by parents not, you know, conversing with their kids as much as they should. But skills like that can be strengthened, and parents can put them in positions where they have to work on those skills, and I think that's pretty important.
You know, we always talk about the importance of kids learning in school, too, and then applying what they learn in school to regular everyday instances. I know we live here in New Orleans, and we always talk about building up the levees here so that the water doesn't come in. Well, you know, I can remember back, and some people would say, I'm not going to let my kid go outside, it gets all dirty. You know, I would love for a child to go outside to build a moat of mud and figure out how that water is coming out, where it's coming from, and how to keep it where it needs to be. And something as simple as that can lead to a job in the future where, you know, they say, you know what, I tried that before. You know I had hands-on experience. So those little connections that they had learned then can actually translate into their education later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love dirty kids. we live out by some ponds, and I specifically picked that area so they could go frog hunting and find salamanders and things like that. There's really good research on your kids being able to explore and be creative and not always have forced learning or directed learning, but sort of work with them where they are. And so it's very important for parents to allow that and to let them go experience things and develop, you know, things that they really enjoy doing or like. They do come in, they'll come in with a frog, which they can't come in, but
right.
Close to the entrance of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then they want to look the frog up and learn about it and learn about newts or things like that. So it's very important to have that attitude.
So I think with your training, you could also eventually learn more through the senses, like touching and feeling and seeing, and then those connections, once you start sparking those, when they come in and they're learning more information from you on a different pathway of the brain and just trying to connect all of those together. When I think of your training with Learning Rx, I always think of, you know, how many fireworks can go up in the air and then see how they all start to overlap.
Yes, and so kids that would go through our training, we will emphasize working in their weakest areas like attention skills or speed. But what happens in the process is their weaknesses become stronger and their strengths become stronger as well. So it definitely impacts, you know, even they're better at math, even though they struggled with reading. You know, it affects all that. Oh, just on the ADHD side, there is good research that shows that a nature walk, about a 10 to 20 minute nature walk, has mm-hmm. the same effects as ADHD medication or even Zoloft, like a medicine for depression.
Right.
And so that's another good reason to let them outside and go for walks. I used to make one of my sons walk almost every day
mm-hmm.
before I tried to do homework with him, just based on that study.
My son climbed the tree, the evergreen tree in the backyard. It was 4 stories high, and he had to go as high as he could until the tree started to swing with him on it. That's as high. Then he knew he was high enough. Then he would come in and do his homework. So I think anything that works to be able to have the child, you know, work and feel all that energy outside and then come in and then do something different, you know,
yes.
it's a big deal.
Yes.
The other thing, too, we were saying about autism spectrum for everyone to understand is that on the spectrum, there are totally different places your child may be. While we're not saying that Learning Rx is going to, quote, cure anything, like where your child, if they're verbal or nonverbal, this is not speech therapy, but this is something that will have your brain start to fire differently. It'll just wake up some of those sleepy cells that may not be connecting, but it's not doing it by drugs. It's very important to know. So I would encourage everyone to look at learningrx.com. That is all about the type of training, where the training centers are. If you do not notice the name in your phone book or somewhere close to you when you put in the zip code on the website, there may be some other places that may not be using that same name of Learning Rx because they're licensed franchise. But if it comes up on the learningrx.com, then they do use the same techniques. Also, if everyone is interested, unlock the einsteininside.com. There's a free download of the book that we were talking about, which outlines all of the information about the Learning Rx, what is important about training exercises. It has several tips in there about your brain and why it's so important, and it talks a little bit about the testing, where the testing may be occurring, how you can find out about it, what type of testing you should be looking at, and what type of issues your child may have that this form of training may help. So, Tanya, as we come to the end of the hour, do you have some more information you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I was just thinking about parenting styles and how you and I seem to have similar parenting styles, and maybe other people, you know, grew up differently.
Right.
My dad, who's the founder of the program, also wrote a book called The Purpose-Directed Business, which you can get at, I think you can get it at drkengibson.com. And the reason I bring that up is because he had a lot of stories in there about, he had five kids, so I'm one of five. And he had lots of stories in there about how he trained his own kids, you know, and then how it led to the business that he has now, which four of his kids work in his business. But I just thought it was interesting, you know, when I broke my window, when I broke a window at the house when I was seven, I had to call people to fix it myself.
Yes, yes.
So things like that, I just thought I'd bring it up.
Well, you know, I really think it's important to have your kids do those type things, because I can remember my daughter when she got her first driver's license, and she went to school and it was raining, and the road was kind of slippery, and of course, this is her first experience. She only had her license for a few months. And at 7 o'clock in the morning, she puts her brakes on and the car skidded a little bit. And the guy behind her hit her and pushed her into someone else. So she calls me up and she says, I got in an accident. It's no big deal. The guys are all gone. And, you know, my front fender is just pushed in. I said, that's great. So you can go to school. She says, oh, no, just call the insurance. Have them come to school to fix it. And it's like, see you later. I got to go. I'm busy. Bye. And hung up. And when she got home, she was like all frantic that someone or something else was going to fix it. Well, we had her look it up. She had to look it up on the internet to find herself a junkyard, right? And her, that was really crazy. She says, what do I need a junkyard for? I said, because you're going to go over there, pull the part, you're going to bring it back, and you and your brother are going to put it on. And she squawked and squawked and squawked and didn't want to do anything about it. But she sat out there with her brother and learned how to take off the bumper, check the car out, put another one on. Do you know, to this day, she's just now finishing her last year of pre-med, and she still has that same odd-colored bumper on the car. And she could care less. She says, everybody in school wants to ride in my car because they know it starts and I'm good. You know,
yep.
So how you teach your child to interact into the world instead of putting your child in a place where, oh, well, he has this label and that label. Take all those labels off and just have your child explore everything. You know, so many parents keep them sheltered and, oh, well, I'll do it for him and I'll fix this, that, and the other. And it's like, why, you know, let them figure it out.
Right. There was I have a good piece of research, and what it looked at was parents that would tell their kids how great they were,
mm-hmm.
versus a parent that would tell their kids how hard they should work. You know, and,
right.
and so they would praise them for hard work versus just being great. And the parents that praise their child for hard work and good effort, those kids' IQ scores went up maybe 6 to 8 points. And the
mm-hmm.
kids that were told, oh, you're so smart, you're so great, those kids' IQs went down.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to learn from that, in that if we praise our children for effort and hard work and trying, even if it's difficult, that they start having that attitude towards life. Where if you're smart, then you have to protect yourself to show people how smart you are. So you don't want to try anything that you may not be smart at. So that's good. I love to force my kids to do things. Build those skills.
Well, I'm sure when they go through the training, a lot of kids might be having a fit and they're like, I'm not going to do this. This is stupid. You're sectioning me out. When really the parent needs to step up and learn and be able to start taking some effort and maybe even learning themselves on how to have your brain answer to different questions or be able to solve other issues or remember or learn or read or do math, you know, instead of focusing on just machines to do it. So if you're a parent, I would highly encourage you to grab the book. It is available at Amazon.com, but it's also, you can get a free download of the book, which is great, at UnlockTheEinsteinInside.com. So take that first step. Find out more information about your brain, about how you may be able to help your child, and then you can check into the training. It is at LearningRx.com. And there you will find out about some of the centers around the world that are able to help your child. You go in and you would have them help you with training this child's brain to be able to respond better, to fire better, to be exercised, as we call it. In other words, just if I see something, maybe I'll remember it and I'll come back and then, you know, exercise that brain. What did you remember from 2 seconds ago? Or what words did you pick up? Or maybe I'm starting to do better in school. The parents can also be listening and learning from the child and how the child is doing. And also the parent can grab a benefit too. So again, my guest today was Tanya Mitchell. She is of LearningRx. The book is UnlockTheEinsteinInside.com. So Tanya, thank you so much for being my guest today. I really think a lot of people would start to think maybe they should be, you know, unplugging some of the things and participating in their children's, you know, education.
Good. I enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you so much for being with me today. Thank you to everybody. If you have some more questions, Tanya's information is also listed on the description of this show. Under the show description, you will be able to find her website and how to contact her. You will also be able to send her an email through the website if you have any questions at all. She'd be more than happy to get back to you to help you if you feel you have a unique situation. So thank you, everybody, for being with us today. And until tomorrow, have a good day.